Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 69, dude, Banana Blitz. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Let's do this.
And we are back once again, of course, to talk about what's been going on in the world of Nintendo. We'll have a little bit of news, a little bit of hands-on impressions, and we'll have this week's big topic, which is a bit of a flashback retrospective on the cartoon Captain N, the Game Master. That's right, Captain N, the Game Master.
That's right.
But before we get to that, why don't we start out talking about one of this season's hottest, most anticipated games, Pokemon Sun and Moon.
In your world, maybe.
Well, in like everyone's world, it seems. I mean, have you seen the latest stats on this thing? This is apparently like the most pre-ordered Nintendo game ever, certainly the most pre-ordered Pokemon game ever, and the most downloaded 3DS demo ever.
Yeah, this is, and this, I know it is. It's all result of Pokemon Go. There's just a renewed interest in Pokemon.
I'm positive that's part of it.
I know it's. I can't otherwise describe any other cause to this game being so popular right now.
Well, I mean, I've been playing Pokemon Go, but I certainly don't love Pokemon Go. But I feel like they are doing a lot of really fresh things with Pokemon Sun and Moon that they maybe haven't done in the last several entries. You know, the setting is really different. Some of the characters are really different.
Isn't just a reskin?
I don't know. I mean, in some ways it's very similar, but the way it's presented does make it feel fresher than most of the entries in the series.
Okay. I'm just a little pessimistic about the whole thing because I'm not a big Pokemon fan, but...
Well, as I told you, I played the demo.
Yeah.
And it does feel, you know, like 85-90% the same as previous Pokemon games, but it still does feel much fresher than your average Pokemon title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus it's a brand new game, it's not a remake of any type, and it's got lots of you know, new user-friendly features, I think, that will help it be more enjoyable by an even wider audience. So it has a lot of things going for it. But specifically what I wanted to talk about is the final form evolutions of the starter Pokemon. You know, they're continuing to trickle out lots of information. And that could be another reason why this game seems to have so much momentum, is because they're rolling out a lot more information, certainly, in North America than they typically do.
Yeah.
So the starter Pokemon were revealed some time ago.
Yep.
And we had Rowlet, the owl creature. Popplio looks kind of like a seal. And Litten, which is a fiery kitten.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have seen what they evolve into in their third and final evolutionary forms in the game. So Rowlet turns into, I don't even know how to pronounce this character's name, Decidueye?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Anyway, it's a grass ghost-type Pokemon, and he kind of looks like an archer or a ninja. Reminds me of a Green Arrow somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Popplio turning into Primarina, which is a water fairy type. It's like, it's a ballerina. It's like a ballerina seal.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Litten, who evolves into Incineroar, a fire dark type Pokemon. It's basically a pro wrestler. It's even got like a championship belt made out of fire.
Yeah, it's it didn't strike me immediately that was a pro wrestler, but now that you say it, it's pretty obvious.
Well, its special move is even called Darkest Lariat, with the Lariat being a pro wrestling
mm-hmm.
move, and
mm-hmm.
its type is like heel Pokemon, which you know, that is a wrestling term as well.
Oh, yeah.
Heel, not heel Pokemon.
Yeah.
That would be weird. So what do you think? Does this change your perceptions of the starter Pokemon? Which ones do you think are cool? Which ones do you think are lame? What are your thoughts, Scott?
I was gravitating towards the owl, but mm-hmm. now that I see his final form, I'm not. I'm more leaning towards the lion.
Really? You don't like Decidueye?
I
kind of like that one. I think he looks kind of cool as a ninja archer guy.
He's kind of cool. All right. I mean, how cool are you going to make an owl look, I guess?
Yeah, I suppose so.
I the only one I'm disappointed about is the seal. Just looks kind of lame. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly not very manly. It's probably not for guys. Probably especially not for older guys. I was never, you know, looking at Popplio as a likely candidate for being my starter. I wasn't really a fan of the original starter form, and I'm not a big fan of Primarina either. It hasn't really gotten any better with the evolution. So, Yeah, not sold on that at all.
Why can't they make it a feminine character that was a little more badass? I appreciate there's some spikes on its waist area, but otherwise it's like smiling, for Pete's sake. It's smiling. I'm not gonna send a smiling Pokemon into battle. Come on.
Well, I guess they want to have some variety out there, you know, different strokes for different folks, yeah, and all that sort all of right. thing. But, you know, for me, Litten was always going to be my starter because it's a cat, for crying out loud. It's a flaming cat. So that was always a pretty great idea. Mm-hmm. And now that it's evolved into a pro wrestling burning fire lion cat thing, then it's like getting even better. So this is only, for me, reaffirmed that Litten is the starter Pokemon for me in Sun and Moon.
If I were to play this game, I would probably go with Litten for my...
Okay.
Just because it's, I don't know, it's cool looking.
It is cool looking. I like it. I think we have a consensus. Anyway, we only got about 2 weeks until the game comes out. I look forward to trying a Litten out at that time and evolving into a championship contender. Well, as I said, this is definitely going to be one of the season's hottest titles, but Nintendo is also counting on the success of an existing title to be a big hit this fall, and that is the update to Animal Crossing New Leaf, which is called Welcome Amiibo. And Nintendo had said that they were going to be doing a little Nintendo Direct, an Animal Crossing Direct, and they'd reveal the new features finally earlier today. But guess what? They just went ahead and released the update. So it's out there. You can play it right now.
Yeah.
You don't need to watch the video to learn all about it. Although it helps.
Yeah, I would say so, because there's a lot going on in this update.
There's a good deal of stuff, and the main thing is that there's now this magic lamp that you can find in the game, and there is a character in there called Wisp, and he will grant you wishes. He'll grant you amiibo wishes, and sometimes that means bringing new characters into the game, because there's this new RV campground area, and so you can invite these characters in using your amiibo cards, and then you can try to invite them to stay in your town if you want.
If they visit the campground, then you get to know them, and then they'll come join your town?
I'm not sure exactly how it works. You know, sometimes they might turn you down. Sometimes, presumably, they will be like, yes, this sounds great. I'm not sure what the requirements are, and I haven't had a whole lot of a chance to try it out yet myself. I'll get to that a little bit more in a moment. You know, going into the details of what else you can do with the amiibo, you can also scan in the figurines, and apparently those even give you some sort of, you know, really cool bonuses, like new mini games, an Animal Crossing Puzzle League, you know, based on the classic Puzzle League game, and then Desert Island Escape, which was actually a mode in the horrible Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival game for Wii U.
Yeah.
And while that game was pretty terrible, that mode, Desert Island Escape, was by far the best part of that game. So it's pretty cool to see that coming over into New Leaf. And then there's also, like, if you use your Splatoon and your Zelda Amiibo, there are Splatoon and Zelda crossovers. There's special characters. Like, I guess you can get a pig named Ganon to move to your town. Medley from Wind Waker. And even...
Wolf Link.
There's a wolf, yes. Totally. It's totally Wolf Link.
Yeah. And you get, like, customized RVs based on those properties as well, right?
Yeah, customized RVs. Each character has his own unique RV, either the Zelda and the Splatoon ones, and also just the regular characters. And they all have special furniture that you can't get anywhere else. And you can buy that furniture and use it to decorate your town and your home. So, yeah, lots of cool stuff going on there. But I went ahead and I got the update. And I'm like, okay, let's try this stuff out. Let's see what's going on here. And so far, I do not have the magic lamp. No magic lamp. I can't yet scan in amiibo. So
weird. And that's what the update is supposed to give you.
Yes. I mean, I definitely got the update. You know, it's got the new title screen. There's new features.
Can you visit the campground area?
Yeah, I can visit the campground. Harvey, the new hippie character, is there. And there was an RV there that I could go visit. But I think some of the stuff is like time release. I might have to come back tomorrow and then I'll be able to get my magic lamp. And also, you can only scan one amiibo per day, apparently. That's what it says according to the instructions. So So here's what they've done. They've made this new update, and they've also had some other new features. Like there's this new secret storeroom you can get for your house, so you can now have way more storage space, possibly infinite storage space.
For hoarders, for Animal Crossing hoarders.
So I did that. I went to Tom Nook and took out my loan and got that new addition going to my house. Yeah. And then I went around and started just cleaning up my town a little bit, trying to get back into it, trying to remember, you know, what I did in this game, because it's been like 2 years.
Yeah.
And all my villagers were like...
Who dug all these holes in my town?
Fortunately, there were not a lot of holes. Okay. Not even that many weeds. A lot of dead flowers I had to clean up. So they got me playing it. Yeah. And then they're like, aha, but we're going to dole out this stuff slowly. You're going to have to come back tomorrow if you want to scan your amiibo. And then you're going to have to come back the day after that if you want to try out a different amiibo. Mm-hmm. And so they're really... The way they've implemented these features makes you having to keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back.
Hmm.
And hopefully... I will be like, oh yes, these are great. I wanna keep doing this for a while now.
Huh.
Another new feature is these new initiatives, as they call them, which is basically little tiny mini goals that you are given. And that's the thing with Animal Crossing, is that there usually aren't very specific goals other than, you know, pay off your loan. But it's just like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, collect fruit and some bugs and go fishing. But now there are goals, you know, water 20 plants, collect 5 bugs, mm-hmm. collect so many fish. And so if you were like, okay, I'm not playing this game anymore because I've accomplished all my personal goals. Now it's like, okay, well, here's another reason to do it. You can accomplish these goals. And then you're rewarded with these new coupons. They're called Meow coupons. And that is what you have to use to buy the new items that you find in the RV campground. And personally, I think it is kind of sort of lame that it means that all your previous money, all your bells you've accumulated, you've been playing this game and stocking up on bells, now they're like worthless. You can't do anything with them because all the new stuff is bought through these coupons.
Really? There's no like currency exchange? So there's like an in-game ATM that's called the Cat Machine, and I just assume that would allow you to convert cat coupons to bells, but... Maybe not.
The Cat Machine, which stands for like, you know, Coupon Attainment Terminal or something, is just where you go after you complete these initiatives.
Okay.
So you've accomplished these, you go there, and it spits out some coupons. Now, there is a way to, I think, exchange your coupons for bells, but I don't think it goes the other way. I don't think you can turn your bells into coupons. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's the impression I've gotten so far.
And then there's also the option of selling your town to Tom Nook and becoming homeless. Did I get that right?
Well, you don't become homeless. You sell your town and then you just can start over.
Okay.
If you've decided, I haven't played this game in 2 years or something, but I want to get back into it now. But, you know, my town, you know, it kind of, I don't like the way it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all gone to heck. Or you just want to try something fresh and not having to worry about what you've done before. Yes. You can sell to Tom Nook, and then you get this new, you know, a nest egg. So you have a bunch of cash to start with, and you can just, start from scratch and do it all over again. Personally, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to continue with my town. I like the way it's been going so far, and surprisingly, not everybody was dead when I came back there. Only one guy had moved away, really.
Oh.
So.
And it's a free update.
Yes, it came out today.
Well, as of the recording of this show.
Yeah, and there's also a retail version in December, but, you know, there's no reason to buy that. It's just, you know, that's going to be on the cartridge, whereas if you were to buy the versions out now, you buy the cartridge, you pay the same amount of money, you get the free download.
Yep.
But, yeah, if for some reason you don't have internet to do updates, in which case, how are you listening to this podcast, then I guess it's good to know that that retail version is coming out next month. So you've been kind of hemming and hawing back and forth. Is this going to make you whip the game out and start playing it again? I mean, I know you're not a big amiibo fan.
No,
so.
I just have too many other games to play. I haven't even finished Kirby Planet Robobot.
The thing about Animal Crossing, though, is it's not a game that you're going to spend for hours on end like you do with Kirby or Paper Mario. It's one where you're supposed to play for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes a day. And, you know, just accomplish a couple of tasks and then, you know, go back to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You play it, frequently, but you don't play it constantly.
Yeah.
That's, I think, kind of the way it's supposed to work. And, so far, it seems to be working on me. We'll see where we are a week from now, if I've still got interest in it or if it's already tired me out. Anyway, speaking of Amiibo, I actually got my hands on some brand new Amiibo recently. And you might be thinking, oh, is that the new Super Mario Wave, Donkey Kong, Diddy Kong, Wario, Daisy, Boo? And I actually did see those in the store yesterday. They're supposed to officially be out on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I've got them, you know, coming my way via Amazon, but I don't have them just yet. The Amiibo I'm actually talking about are Japanese exclusives currently, the ones from Monster Hunter Stories. I kind of forgot I ordered them.
And this is how you wind up with two Amiibos.
Well, so far there's no announcement, no plans for release of the game or the Amiibo in the U.S., but they looked pretty cool. So that's why I wanted to go ahead and order them and take a look and see what they're all about. And it is, there are three of them. It is a trio at this time. There are three more coming in December. The first one that I've got here is named Nibiru, and he is a little cat character. He kind of looks like he would fit right in Animal Crossing, actually. You know, with a big head and a small body, and actually kind of looks like a weird naked child with a tail and a cat head. It's kind of disturbing, really. Yeah. It's a weird one. It is not my favorite Amiibo. I mean, cat Amiibo, you know, that sounds cool, but I don't know, he's bizarre. I've decided I'm not a big fan of this character design. I feel like it needs to wear some clothes or something. I am not crazy about it. It's very simple also, not a whole lot of details, and it's just sort of a weird character. Maybe if I played the game, I'd be like, okay, this character is great. He's a lot of fun. Have to have his Amiibo. But as it stands, it is one of my least favorite Amiibo.
But you're kind of forced to pick him up because it comes in a three-pack, right?
No, these were all separate. Oh, they're separate. But, you know, you got to catch them all, man. Got to catch them all.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. And when you look at the other two released alongside of him, he is really doesn't fit. It's like one of these things is not like the others.
Because the other two that you are alluding to, they are pretty badass. They include the, it's a one-eyed Rathalos. There are two of them. There's a one-eyed Rathalos with a boy rider and a one-eyed Rathalos with a girl rider. A Rathalos being one of the monsters from the game. It's basically a sort of miniature dragon. It's orange with dark blue highlights and, you know, cream color on the wings. And it's also got a scar over one of the eyes. Thus, it being a one-eyed Rathalos. The Rathalos, the dragon, is different depending on if you go with the boy version or the girl version. The girl version, it is, crouched down low and running. The boy version looks more like it's stalking. The wings are more spread out. The mouth is open. Much more of an attack pose. And, the riders sort of match that. The boy rider has his sword pulled back and drawn. Lots of cool details on the rider as well. The girl, she's just kind of, you know, looking cute and pointing, no weapons or anything like that. But she's also got lots of detail. They both have these sort of, you know, feathery outfits and cloaks, as well as, not super detailed armor, but detailed enough. The metallic looking knee pads, and in the case of the guy, sword and shield, and as well as horns on his headgear. They're both very large. These are probably like the largest amiibo there are out there outside of Mega Yarn Yoshi. So they're pretty darn hefty. Plus, the riders are removable and interchangeable. So if you want to have the guy on the running, crouching Rathalos and the girl on the roaring one, you can do that. And presumably, when the next batch of these comes out in December, there's going to be three more of them that are characters riding creatures. Presumably those are interchangeable as well. They're really cool. I really hope they come out here. I really hope the game comes out here because they are pretty darn neat.
Yeah, I'm surprised they can keep these at the same $13 price tag. Maybe they're...
Oh, they're a little more than that.
Oh, they are. So if...
I mean, I'm not sure exactly what they are in yen.
Okay.
But...
because it feels like you're getting two amiibo here, practically, because you've got
the interchangeable
character and the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd expect them to probably be maybe around $18 if they were to be released here in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, about $5 more than the current ones. Mm-hmm. But that's just a guesstimate. I did pay about $5 more than I would pay for an average import amiibo. So that's why I'm saying
that.
But yeah, I like them. That reminds me, though, speaking of Monster Hunter, Capcom recently announced that there is a Monster Hunter XX coming out for the 3DS in Japan on March 18th. Monster Hunter X was their name for Monster Hunter Generations, which came out earlier this year in the U.S. So this is a sequel to that, more of an upgraded version, I guess you could say. It's going to have some new hunting styles, including a Brave style, which rewards you for heavy offense and parrying lots of attacks, and then something called Renkin style. I'm not really sure what that is. There's going to be a new main monster. They also say there's going to be lots of other new stuff, but they aren't really divulging any further details at this time. But still, kind of cool to see if that's coming. The big question for me, of course, is that after they deliver this Monster Hunter XX, will there be a Monster Hunter XXX?
Oh my.
Speaking of Capcom products, I also recently got my hands on some other pretty neat collectibles. Mega Man.
I love me some Mega Man.
Yep, so do I.
I had to stop buying collectible Mega Man figures because, man, I ran out of room.
Well, you'll have room for these. These are cool. Pretty small.
Okay, how small?
These are 4-inch Mega Man figures from a company called Sentinel in Japan. They go by the somewhat awkward name of 4-inchnel figures.
Because of Sentinel? That's ridiculous. Yes. 4-inchnel.
So there is a classic Mega Man, and then there is a Mega Man EXE from Mega Man Battle Network. And, you know, it's weird. When you think 4 inches, you kind of don't realize how small that is. And then you get these in your hand. You're like, wow, this is like the size of a G.I. Joe figure or smaller. So they are fairly tiny, but they're also pretty darn poseable. Very highly articulated, especially at the elbows and knees. You know, a lot of action figures, you know, they only have like 90 degrees of motion at the elbow. So it just sort of stops after a certain point. But this one, there's extra articulation, so you can bend the elbow and like make basically have the character, you know, touch his own shoulder or bend the legs all the way back so you can really get the full range in the knee. So as far as that stuff goes, the articulation is very, very impressive. You know, lots of flexibility in the shoulders as well.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, they are not perfect. They are definitely lacking a little bit of something. Like with the head, you can't really turn the head from side to side very well. You know, there's lots of articulation in the classic Mega Man to be able to make him, you know, tilt his head up and down. But turning side to side, no, strangely, not that easy. And the same with Mega Man EXE. In his case, it's because he has these sort of weird parts coming out of the back of his helmet, and he has his backpack on, and so those keep bumping into each other, and that prevents you from having a full range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, the accessories are kind of limited.
Mm-hmm.
They do both come with swappable hands, swappable weapons, swappable faceplates, but compared to other high-end Mega Man action figures, the selection is kind of lacking, and that makes it hard to pose and display the figures in some of their more iconic poses from the games and from the artwork.
I think the bigger surprise with these is the price. These are not cheap.
No, they're not cheap.
So for
they're 40 inch, bucks. About 40 bucks.
That's 10 bucks an inch.
Yes. Yeah. So compare that to, you know, like a 4-inch Star Wars figure.
Yeah, cuz the D-Arts line, that line, they were bigger figures, more parts. It feels like there's more parts.
Yes.
And
yes.
The price was about the same. 40 bucks.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of them might have been a little bit more expensive.
So you're paying for the miniaturized. Yeah. These look to be even more articulated than those.
I think they are.
But, oh man, that's tough. That's tough. You got to be a big fan to want these little guys because they're not going to stand out on a shelf unless they're the only thing on the shelf.
Well, I put it with my other Mega Mans. It's a nice collection.
What does the packaging look like? Is the packaging nice?
The packaging is actually pretty plain. It's just like a plain old box. There's no artwork. There's no photographs on it. And one other knock against it is the display stands. It comes with these display stands, but it's just an articulated arm with a clamp on it.
Yeah, looks pretty generic.
Some figures, like Nendoroids, for example, have an arm with a little pin in it that, you know, plugs into the character's back, and then you can put in all kinds of cool poses like flying or jumping. But with this, just this arm with a clamp, it's really obtrusive, and it's not a very good solution at all for posing your figure in cool positions. Mm-hmm. So I like him in some ways, but I can't really wholeheartedly recommend them. I do think the D-Art stuff is better.
And there's two more of these coming out next year in the same line. And
well, there's a few
the prices on
out.
These. Oh, there are a few. There's like...
There are two packs. Yeah, okay. There's Super Mega Man and Cut Man. Uh-huh. I think that one's probably not till next year. And then there are Mega Man with the Jet Adapter and the Power Adapter from Mega Man 6. And that should be out sooner, I think. I think that's later this year.
So those are really expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
I mean, they look cool. The Super Mega Man and Cut Man one looks really cool, but man.
Yeah, I'd love to get those because they look so nice. But ultimately, I would say that these 4-inch Nell Mega Man figures were not quite as good as I was hoping. Not awful, just not as good as I was hoping.
Them's expensive Mega Man toys. My gosh. And this is coming from a guy who owns a $130 Mega Man pillow.
Yeah, well, if you hadn't bought that, you could have saved up for Cutman Super Mega Man, couldn't you?
Oh, it's true and sad.
Well, I think that takes care of our news segment of the show. Why don't we take a little intermission, and when we come back, we'll have our big topic, Captain N, the Game Master. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the quote-unquote classic cartoon show, Captain N, the Game Master. Scott, you and I got together a couple of days ago. We sat down on your couch.
Boy, did we ever.
We pulled out a few beverages, and we watched the entire first season of this show.
Wow. We did. We watched a whole season of this. It was hours of this show. And we needed beverages to get us through this because it was rough.
Yeah, so for the uninitiated, for the people who, you know, didn't see the show originally.
Let's talk about that. Where did this come from?
Yeah, what is the premise? Where did this come from? Originally, there was a short story in the third and fourth issues of Nintendo Power about a gamer, a Nintendo employee, in fact.
Captain Nintendo.
Who gets these special video game powers, and he has to fight video game villains like Mother Brain and Ganon, who have come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the Captain N show is loosely based on that.
Very loosely adapted.
But in the show, the main character is sucked into the TV and into video land, where he meets famous game characters and fights famous game villains. No offense to Tron, but the whole leaping into video games thing is pretty goofy, in my opinion. On the other hand, I actually like a lot about what they have in the premise of the show, which is it mixes together all of these game worlds. And so, you know, when you're a kid, that sounds like the greatest thing. It's like, oh, it's going to take all my favorite properties and put them all into one show. Mm-hmm. This sounds really fun. And even as an adult, it doesn't sound like a bad idea. I mean, it's sort of like what Smash Brothers is.
Yeah.
And so you have these, you know, really great properties from, you know, way back in the NES days. You have Mega Man and you have Castlevania starring Simon Belmont. And then, you know, Nintendo's involved. For some reason, they don't have, you know, the big characters. You don't have Mario. You don't have Link. Link does show up eventually, but I guess he had his own cartoon at the time, so he was off limits.
Mm-hmm.
Samus isn't there, but you do get Kid Icarus, who was unfortunately named Kid Icarus instead of Pit.
Yep.
But those are the main characters. Pit, a.k.a. Kid Icarus, Mega Man, and Simon Belmont. They meet up with this Captain N. His name is Kevin. And then they are joined by the princess of Videoland named Lana. So those are your good guys, and they are fighting the evil villainy of Mother Brain and her lackeys, King Hippo, Eggplant Wizard, Dr. Wily, and Count Dracula, also from Castlevania, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it starts. That's what it's all about. You take all that, you turn it into a TV show, and somehow it turns out completely freaking kind of awful.
Well, let's talk about how it got there. Because this is a situation where a cartoon production company licensed the Nintendo brand and
right.
was practically given carte blanche to put whatever characters they wanted to into the show. They gave a writer who had been known for writing Muppet Babies episodes, and they were actually, you know, I watched Muppet Babies as a kid. I loved it, and the plots weren't completely bananas. They were pretty, you know, they're moral tales, and, you know, it was fun.
Okay.
So this writer was handed an NES and a handful of games, and they're like, go ahead, write some stories around this. And that's, so he played those games
he must have played it for 5 minutes or something, because
exactly,
because it does not seem like the people who made this show know anything about these
No one who cared about the NES or these games or the characters in these games, no one who cared was a part of the making of this show. So that's how it got to where it got, which is a writer who knew nothing about Nintendo, the games, or anything, just played an NES for what was probably an afternoon. Maybe he thumbed through some manuals and instruction booklets to get some character names, and then he was off to the races. So,
well, he knew something about warp zones, because they really like the term warp zone in this game. Yeah. Everything is a warp zone.
Everything's a warp zone, and
going from one place to another. Oh, you're taking a warp zone. Oh, how did Kevin get to Videoland from the real world? Oh, he got transferred by the ultimate warp zone, which strangely enough looks like a power glove.
They call that a writer's conceit. It's kind of like, let's write our way out of this with some crappy, like, let's wave. This is a hand-waving gesture. Now here is a warp zone, and we got our characters to the next area.
If you're to believe this show, warp zones are a major part of all video games, and they can do almost anything.
It makes for really bad plots where it's just nonsensical. It's a lot of really bad, like, vaudeville humor. It's, like, I don't know, practical, like, it's a lot of cheesy gags. It's a lot of terrible one-liners.
Well, it's not concerned at all about being true to the source material.
The characters are just completely wrong in so many ways.
I guess the other issue is that they knew they were writing for kids. They aren't trying to write for a broader audience. They're not trying to be clever. They're kind of just figuring, hey, this is a kid's show. We don't have to make sense. We can be as dumb as we want to be. You know, this is just, you know, based on some fad that no one's going to care about, you know, 2 years from now, so whatever, who cares? We'll just not worry about all this stuff and just throw this out there and make just some dumb, ridiculous show. And that's what we got.
There was zero quality control, it seems, except for one thing. The animation is actually pretty good for at least the first season. I hear it drops off in the third season when they really cheesed it on the animation and paid far less for the Korean production company to work on it. But the first...
Well, I have to say, I wasn't very impressed with the animation in this season, so...
I appreciated that there was a lot of detail in the characters. You know, when they drew Mother Brain from behind, like...
Yeah, they did do that. They kept doing that.
You know, pretty cool. The characters, even though they're not correct in any way, they're actually interesting looking and not poorly drawn.
Well, I'll say it looks okay for a Saturday morning cartoon show from the 80s.
It looks very...
I'll give it okay. That much.
All right.
But, you know, by a lot of standards, I don't know. I can't say it looks good.
But honestly, even if it looked like Disney quality animation, it'd still be garbage because the There's no plot or anything, and the characters are completely unlikable. But let's talk about the characters.
Yeah, the thing is, the characters could have been really cool. The creators could have said, we've got Mega Man, he's this robot who can use all these great powers, and we've got Simon Belmont, he's this battle-hardened vampire-fighting warrior, but they didn't go that way. Instead, they decided to put their own spin on things. Why don't we start with Simon Belmont? Because Simon Belmont is perhaps the loudest, most prominent character in the show in some ways, don't you think?
Yeah, he's got the most lines, the most spoken
he's
lines.
He's got the most personality, yes.
And actually, that made me like him more than a lot of the other characters, just because he's the only character you kind of could wrap your hands around and say, I know who this character is.
But Simon, of course, in the video games, he is a vampire killer. He is a barbarian dude with long hair and a whip and this, you know, badass leather armor outfit. For some reason, in this show, he has short blonde hair. He has aviator goggles on. He has this blue furry jacket as well as trousers.
He's more like Pitfall Harry. Yeah, he reminds me of Pitfall Harry more than...
To me, he reminds me of Launchpad McQuack.
Okay, yeah.
From DuckTales.
Yeah, especially with those goofy pants.
As far as how he looks. They have the very similar proportions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the pants. Yeah, the poofy pants.
They turn him into an adventurer.
So he looks nothing like Simon Belmont
at
all.
Lack of research, I'm gonna attribute that to.
I mean, it could have been any character. They could have had any character be called that, except for the fact that he does use a whip. So I give them credit for making him use a whip. But other than that, they could have been like, this is Billy Lee from Double Dragon. This is Ryu from Ninja Gaiden. Then, in addition to totally changing the character design, he's also an egomaniacal D-bag who spends every episode preening in front of a mirror. He tends to betray all his allies, and he's an idiot.
He's an idiot, but he does come in and rescue people once in a while, and he is fairly competent with a whip.
Yes, he does, once in a while.
That's, yeah, and so he's goes against whatever character type they created for him sometimes throughout the series.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that out of all the characters, he's the only one that has, like, any complexity, which is, ha-ha, I am an egomaniacal jerk, but I'm also going to come to the rescue once in a while.
He sees him
look at my shiny teeth.
He sees himself as, like, a dashing do-gooder, but he's also just completely incompetent, but he sometimes saves the day.
He's also very, very tan. It's like, he looks like a roast turkey in
some
ways. Yeah,
you wonder why he didn't just use the same pink paint for everybody.
And they had a penchant for, like, making him take his clothes off. Like, there's a whole lot of episodes where just suddenly he's, like, running around in a loincloth or just lost his shirt or something. So they had a little bit of an obsession with that.
All right. So let's move on to Mega Man. Because he... Yeah. So now Mega Man is...
Mega Man has a horrible voice and a horrible speech impediment.
So there's...
He sounds like he's been smoking for 70 years.
There is very little say about Mega Man beyond his stupid voice casting.
Well, and he's very green. He's green. He's green. He's the freaking Blue Bomber, but he's green.
He's two shades of green. Yeah, they really messed up the coloring of Mega Man, and his character is just lame.
He hardly does anything for most of the episodes.
Three or four episodes without saying more than like five words. So
all he says is mega high.
In the beginning he says mega high.
Yes.
And then he says mega some garbage. And there is a Mega Man episode, and somehow even in that episode it's Mega Man's birthday. Who cares?
There were kind of two Mega Man episodes. There was that birthday one where they introduced Mega Girl, and it was terrible. And I don't know. He dresses up as a clown. That was just so random. But then there's the earlier episode. Like the first, they actually have a two-parter. They have some continuity between these two episodes. And the first half was like all Kid Icarus, where they were having this horrible episode where they went to, you know, to Kid Icarus World. And that's another thing about the show is all the lands have these awful, terrible, fake names. Like, for some reason, the place where Metroid takes place, it takes place in Metroid. It's not, Planet Zebes or anything like that. You know, Mega Man takes place in Megaland. Anyway, so the first part is all this Kid Icarus thing. But I'm getting off course, because then the second part turns into a Mega Man episode and has all the Mega Man villains in it. It has the entire cast from Mega Man 1, except Cutman is called Cutsman for some reason. He's also got a purple face, and like instead of having his blade on his head, it's like literally a pair of scissors, like just stapled onto his forehead or something. It's ridiculous.
It's funny, but that was the most accurate episode. I feel like if you were to say this is the one episode that felt the most true to the game. That one was the closest, even though...
I don't know about that, but well, at least it had all the villains in there.
It did.
And Bomb Man was kind of on model. Mm-hmm. But everyone else was so ridiculous. They just looked so, so bad. It's hard to even tell who Guts Man was. Elec Man was just so goofy. Then Captain N just pulls out his zapper and, like, shoots all of them, and they all die in one hit. Like, they're the easiest bosses ever. Poor guys.
Lame.
So yeah, Mega Man mostly doesn't have any personality.
Honestly, Mega Man, my least favorite character, even though I love Mega Man. What a garbage version of Mega Man. It's unfortunate.
And it turns out that when he starts taking action, he's kind of a jerk too. It's not as obvious as it is with Simon, but all the good guys are selfish and squabbling, and it's a miracle that they weren't wiped out by Mother Brain a long time ago.
And they're incompetent.
They're all incompetent. They're unlikable.
They're almost as bumbling as the bad guys, Mother Brain's minions, who we'll get to. But
yeah,
so Kid Icarus, and it's funny, this whole show is about people with speech impediments.
Yes, everyone has their own
speech impediment. For some reason, Kid Icarus has to put Icus afterwards, like
yeah, Icus or Ias.
Or Ias, yeah. So,
like, you can't say Kevin, you have to say Kevinicus.
Yeah, instead of Kevin, it's Kevinicus, and, you know.
I can't do an impersonation of him, but he also has a Jersey accent combined with this.
Yeah, he's got some East Coast accent, which is bizarre, and he flies, but only when it's convenient, and yeah, and he's super annoying, almost as annoying as Mega Man. So, and again, one dimensional, because there's a lot of slapstick humor in the show and there's no character development. So all I know about Kid Icarus is he's got wings and he shoots an arrow.
A giant head. Don't forget he has a giant head.
He's got a big head and he's got a bad accent.
Yeah, because they just didn't give a crapicus. So what about Captain N himself? Kevin Keen.
So Kevin is just a very flat, one-dimensional character who gets unwittingly sucked into a video land, and his motivation is he doesn't want to go back to the real world and clean his room because his mother
He really doesn't like his mother.
No, he hates his mom. He's given the opportunity to go home several times in the series, and each time he's like, I'd rather not.
Yeah, every time he thinks about going home, they're like, he just hears the voice in his head, Kevin, clean your room. He's like, God, no, anything with that. I'm not going back to my parents. No, they're going to make me clean.
And who knows? There's probably a search party out there looking for Kevin right now back in his hometown. His parents are crying on television, please return our son. You know, offering a reward, and he could care less. He's just gallivanting through video land.
Yeah. He seems to be kind of a jerk as well, at least when it comes to his family and his parents. So yeah. He doesn't really want to be there. He doesn't really want to save video land, but it's like, it's that or clean my room. So,
and he carries a zapper.
Yes, he carries a zapper.
And he also carries what he calls a power pad.
It is the power pad.
Oh, God. It's a control pad belt buckle, yeah.
It's just called a controller. Control pad, technically, is what we refer to as a D-pad.
Okay,
it's a black cross. That is technically, gotcha, officially, what a control pad is. Either way, it's definitely not a power pad, because then he'd have, like, a giant skirt with numbers on it. He'd be slapping all over the place, which would be hilarious, and he should have done.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he uses that to pause the game, which sometimes includes pausing himself. Sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
He hits up to jump very high, or hits directional buttons to slide out of harm's way. That's what makes him Captain N, the game master, because he can do that sort of stuff.
Rarely is the day saved by him. It's usually the day is saved by some illogically placed warps area Mother Brain gets sucked into. So yeah. And so that leaves the last good character who's worth talking about, Princess Lana,
right,
who's the femme fatale. She is
the leader of Videoland.
Yeah,
but she's not very smart.
No.
She falls for some really, really dumb schemes, and she sure as heck can't keep her team in line. She is not what I would call a great ruler.
No, and I honestly think the show reveals us to be pretty sexist early on, and she's...
Yeah, somehow it finds a way for her to get into various skimpy outfits all over the place.
Very skimpy attire. Very, very skimpy attire. Like, when it's when it's time to there's an Olympics episode, her pants just kept getting smaller and smaller and her tops kept getting tighter and tighter, so it's clear what the animators were going for there. So it's pretty racy.
it's almost a little racy. Almost, kinda, sorta. Yeah. It's still TVPG, man. But yeah, I wish I could say something about her character because she just seems very bleh. Yeah. She's possibly the most bland character on there.
The whole show is. The whole show.
I mean, she doesn't even have a speech impediment to fall back
on. That's right. Oh, and we left off Duke, Captain N's dog.
Captain N's
Kevin's dog.
Dog. Yeah. Stupid. We don't even need to talk about him. He wears a bandana. That's all I need to know. Moving on to the bad guys. They are led by the evil Mother Brain from Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
How they arrive at that decision, I don't really know. In the game, it's like a brain in a glass container.
In a jar.
How do you adapt that for a cartoon? Well, I guess you slap a silly face on it, and then you think, well, it's called Mother Brain. Mother? Mama? Sure, let's just, you know, have her talk like some sort of, you know, angry mama. Except, I think it's voiced by a guy. It sounds like a guy.
It's definitely voiced by a man. So it's funny, the voice of, so Mother Brain sounds like Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors. And and there's a reason, because it is the same person voicing that character. Yes.
Oh, that's
it
amazing.
It is Levi Stubbs of the Four Tops, who does the voice of both Audrey 2 in Little Shop of Horrors and Mother Brain. So he's doing the same voice.
Wow.
He's doing the same voice.
I did not realize that. That is kind of awesome.
So this guy was just handed a script and said, go to it and use your Audrey 2 voice. And that's how
just
we wound up with Mother Brain talking like Audrey 2, which is this very...
And they both have tentacles, too. It kind of makes sense now that you think about it.
So that's what they were going for. They wanted Mother Brain to be like Audrey 2, which is the wisecracking green man-eating plant in Little Shop of Horrors. So yeah, that's how Mother Brain is Mother Brain. Yeah, I like the character actually, but out of all the out of the villains, she's the most tolerable, and she, you know, it's fun. But
the humor almost works for her. It almost works.
It's but there's very few laughs in this show, except for where they get the game so wrong that you can't just not laugh.
Most of the humor is not good.
But if you're wanting to watch this show for laughs, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it for that. But.
Well, I mean, it depends on how many beverages you buy. It becomes much more tolerable if you've had something to drink while you watch it.
I don't know. Or if somebody was paying me to watch it. I feel like that.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, this is a free podcast.
So Mother Brain has three minions, and they are King Hippo, who is... also,
he's blue. Why is he blue? They show him in the intro. Every episode in the intro, they show Kevin playing Punch-Out fighting King Hippo, where he's clearly orange. But for some reason, in the show, he is blue.
And there's no bandage on his belly button.
I can live with that. I can handle that. I cannot handle his gigantic dark blue nipples, though.
which seemingly get bigger
so
as the show goes on.
Big. They are huge and like not
they're so
pointy but like fully rendered. Just can't
why did they
away.
Bother to
gigantic.
Make the nipples a different color than the rest of his body, because honestly
well, they clearly wanted to draw attention
to individually it. Paint each nipple and animate nipples is something someone had to do.
Yes.
And it's just
that's on someone's resume.
It's crazy.
Like lead nipple artist for Captain N the Game Master.
So
man, I feel like I missed my calling.
So King Hippo is teamed up with the eggplant wizard, who's from Kid Icarus, and who is actually another close to what the character's actually supposed to be.
Well, he's actually very on model. Yeah. Looks like the character, at least.
It does.
Unlike, you know, most of the guys.
And he's got
the
wand.
Kid Icarus doesn't look too bad.
Yeah.
And he turns people into vegetables.
That's right, which is his power.
I mean, he is an idiot, but, you know, we don't really see a lot of personality out of that character in the game, so I don't feel like they're going completely off the rails when it comes to the eggplant wizard. I kind of feel like, you know, it's such a blank slate, you can kind of do whatever.
Yeah. And then there's Dr. Wily, who's just there to kind of create inventions that...
Yeah, he invents stuff.
Yeah. So his voice is... He's got a weird speech impediment.
Well, he has a German accent for one thing.
Yeah, he's got a German accent.
Which I wouldn't really expect from Dr. Wily.
He's got this weird way of talking where mid-sentence he'll just go,
Yes, he'll say something, you know, like, we are ready to enact our plan.
Exactly. You got it. You got it close. That was close. For some reason, yeah, Dr. Wily's German.
Yeah.
And he creates silly inventions that, you know, are poorly explained.
Stuff, so
but yeah, all right. That's
kind of a little true. Yeah. And then, even though he's not like a full-time member of the bad guys team, we have Count Dracula, who wears this awful yellow suit. It is the ugliest suit.
He's like ever. Tim Curry's character in Rocky Horror. He's just very flamboyant and goofy and not evil. Like, these are the stupidest characters. Like, honestly, if you said, you know, you could hang out with any of these characters and have dinner with them, I would rather have dinner with the villains of the show.
Yes.
Who are way less one-dimensional than the good guys.
Be cooperative and have fun. Yeah. But yeah, like, one of the highlights of the show, one of the best parts was in, I think it was like the third or fourth episode, when they have to go to the world of Castlevania because Kevin is fighting his evil robot clone twin I don't know.
Oh no, it was a bully.
It's his bully who's also been reformed as Captain N, but it's really a robot. Yeah. So it's a whole bunch of weird. Anyway, they go to Castlevania Land and Kevin is there and then Dracula attacks him. And what does he do? He doesn't bite him. He doesn't suck his blood. He pushes him out a window. And it was just so funny watching him push him out the window like that. That's what you think of when you think of a vampire attacking someone. I'm just going to shove you out a window.
I honestly believe that it was easier to animate somebody getting pushed out the window than it would be to, like, I guess they're, maybe they had a discussion, like, are we allowed to have one character bite another one? Probably not. It's a children's show. So, hey, let's just push him out the window.
Well, no, they have. They did, because there was a later episode where Simon Belmont was bitten by the seven dwarves. Yes, Simon Belmont was bitten by the seven dwarves. Yeah. I just said that. And they actually left tooth marks on his leg. So I don't think they could have Dracula bite him on the neck, of course. Yeah. So I guess it was easy. I'm just like, they can't. Like, it's weird about the rules with the violence. Like, some characters, they just shoot point blank and they turn to pixels and disappear.
Yeah.
Other times, they go to the old cliche, you know, like from the Rambo cartoon. You know, Rambo couldn't shoot anybody when there was a Rambo cartoon, but he could always shoot the light fixture and make it fall on them, which is what happens in this a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, villains are really, they have to stop standing under light fixtures. They would get much further with their plots in kids' cartoons.
And I guess the last villain worth talking about here is Donkey Kong, who's kind of not quite a villain, but for some reason they drew him like the size of a house.
Yeah, he's gigantic. He's enormous.
And
they clearly, you know, thought, oh, well, Donkey Kong, King Kong? Yeah, let's make him enormous.
Stupid. Ugh. It's just so brain dead. To make Donkey Kong that large goes beyond comical and just, it's just head scratcher. It's just a head scratcher. You're just like, why did they draw him so big? What now? How is any character going to interact with Donkey Kong in any meaningful way? Because they're only as tall as like up to his middle of his shin bone. So
what are you talking about? I mean, he had that whole wonderful, loving scene with Simon Belmont, where for some reason Simon Belmont decided Donkey Kong was his mom, not his dad. It's his mom. And this is one of the episodes where Simon Belmont strips down to just a loincloth, and for some reason Donkey Kong is now his mom and is caring for him for like half the episode.
You know, we're making this show sound better than it actually is. We better temper that enthusiasm.
Well, why don't we talk about some of these episodes? What were some of the best and some of the worst episodes? And I use the term best very lightly.
Yeah, we only watched the season, and I say only because I don't know, as we're watching this and as we got to the end.
We watched 13 episodes.
I looked at you and said, we may have watched more Captain N the Game Master than anyone on the planet, because I think you need to be a special kind of crazy to watch and enjoy this show. I think if I destroyed like half my brain cells, I may enjoy a show like this, but man, it is just,
I had enough beverages to temporarily destroy half my brain cells. I think that made it a lot better.
There's very little to enjoy in here. The episodes are completely unmemorable. There's no plot to speak of.
Well, it was plot, but they had all these cliches. All the 80s cliches are there, you know?
Not,
the sports episode, yeah. The traitor episode, cliche. The wedding episode.
Bayou Billy's world, and it's just the bayou, and they call it Bayou Land. Bayou Billy's poorly.
Okay, that episode has a special place for me.
Okay.
Now, I had tried watching this show once before, and I think I only got to the second episode, which is the Bayou Billy episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just last week, we were talking about our least favorite NES games ever, and I said Bayou Billy was one of those for me. So, for them, on their second episode, to bring in Bayou Billy Land, you know, I think it's just kind of, you know, wonderful synergy where they're combining two awful things together.
Yeah.
And apparently Kevin hates the game Bayou Billy, too, which is, you know, wonderfully appropriate. But on top of that, like, they show the Bayou Billy game at the beginning, only it's not Bayou Billy at all. It's like some weird cartoon.
It looks like Pitfall.
Version. It looks like Pitfall. It doesn't look anything like Bayou Billy at all. So somehow they decided to put this character in there, but they didn't know anything about the game other than, you know, it's set in a bayou and his name is Billy and there's probably a crocodile or two. And so there's that. And then he doesn't even look like Bayou Billy. He's got this big old scruffy
like
gray
Popeye.
Beard and like,
yeah,
he does. And his jaw is like ginormous. You know, it's weird that, you know, Kevin and Lana, they look kind of like normal people. Mm-hmm. Everybody else has a horrible facial deformity, including this giant jaw with the gray geezer beard on Bayou Billy, who doesn't even have a Cajun accent, by the way, just has a Southern accent. So they couldn't even get his
really
accent
like
right.
Alabama or something. Well, it's close to Louisiana, but not quite. And then for the whole point of that episode was Captain N needs to get out of the bayou, so the only way he's going to get out is on his survival skills, and who better to teach him those survival skills than Bayou Billy?
Oh, and well, that is one of the great things about this show, and I'm sorry we didn't mention it earlier.
There's a training
montage. But it
seems
like almost every episode has a training montage.
And you can tell when it's coming. They don't even hide the fact that there's going to be a training montage.
Yeah, there are train montages everywhere. There's that one. There's the one where they're training for the sports events. Mm-hmm. There's even a montage for Simon Belmont's wedding to Mother Brain. And yes, I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth.
That's right.
I actually kind of like
when that
music.
Wedding training montage started, I couldn't handle it. I was like, this is just, I just couldn't believe it was happening.
The montages are, I actually found those to be fairly amusing. I actually kind of like the music in this show. I think the montage music is like really good, cheesy 80s music.
Yes, honestly, that is one of the standout good things about the show. They riff on some video game theme music, like the Castlevania. Mm-hmm. And,
the Castlevania
music, the
Metroid music,
Super Mario Brothers,
Mario music,
yep.
Mario 2.
Mm-hmm, Mario 2. So that's fun to listen for. Uh-huh. Those. They feel like Easter eggs when you hear a tune and you're like, oh my gosh, that's totally the, you know, cavern music from Super Mario Brothers 2. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that the composer paid way more attention to these games than the writer did.
Clearly, if they gave the writer an NES, they almost certainly gave the composer an NES so he could deconstruct the songs. So he did a faithful recreation of some of those songs, which mm-hmm. is a lot of fun. Because they're riffs on those. They're riffs on those songs for the games mm-hmm. you love. So.
Yeah, and it's pretty darn good as well.
So you were asking about episodes we liked. I just want to say that the fact that there was there was a two-parter episode about like some half-assed Olympics. It was 45 minutes of a show.
But only the first part was really about the Olympic sports stuff. They completely forgot about that in the second part. Even though
they kept wearing
their sports outfits, which I actually appreciate. It would have been way too easy for them to forget about that and not have any continuity and not worry about it.
It just made you wonder,
but they really wanted Lana to have that her skimpy Olympic outfit on for a little bit
there
longer.
There was no point to having a two-parter episode in there as they did. But that annoyed me because...
And the plot to that one was so
bad. The episodes felt interminable anyway. And they all kind of started to run into each other at a certain point, and not because I had drank too many pina coladas. But at a certain point, the episode started to kind of run into each other, and mm-hmm. I looked at you and said, we got to stop watching this. This is garbage. And we got through a whole season of it. So
there's one other episode that really stood out to me.
Uh-huh.
And that, I don't remember the name of this episode, but it was a Wizards and Warriors themed episode where they went to the land of Excalibur for, it's not called Excalibur. I believe it's called Sindarin is the name of where they're supposed to be going. But when I saw that episode, it's like, wow, they actually have a lot of things in here. They're true to the game. It was more true to the game than anything else, pretty much, in the entire series.
Yeah.
I mean, for the rest of the show, you could be in Castlevania world or Metroid world or Mega Man world, and everything
is the same.
Moving platforms and moving up and down pylons, floating platforms, generic enemies. Mm. But then they have this Wizards and Warriors episode, and you know, at one point, there's like a big... empty tree full of these colored spiders. Like, wow, that's actually what's in the first level of the game. Mm-hmm. There's a plot point where Simon Belmont and Kevin are arguing over this key, or they're squabbling over this key, and Simon gets the key and he runs off. He's like, haha, I'm going to save Alana. You're not going to, you jerk. And then Kevin's like, oh, but there is no green key in Wizards and Warriors, and it is totally true. There's a blue key, a pink key, and a red key. There is no green key.
Well, you wouldn't known that from the booklet, from the instruction booklet.
Maybe, but it's a little detail. I mean, you know a lot of things from the instruction booklet.
It's a detail that for a show that is lacking so many of those key details to have a detail like that thrown in. Yes, it feels like, oh, maybe they did play a level of this game and care a little.
And on top of that, the way that you do go, you play through that game is you collect these gems. Mm-hmm. And then when you have enough gems, the little, the enemy knight moves out of the way and you can proceed on to the boss. And that's actually what they do. They collect all these gems, they bribe the enemy knight, and then they proceed onward. So they actually had a bunch of little details that, like, compared to everything else, it's like, wow, I'm amazed that was in there. Of course, then, you know, Malkiel, the bad guy in the game, who's supposed to be a wizard, in this, he's like some weird midget troll with one chicken claw for a foot for some reason. Just randomly has a chicken claw for a foot. So,
oh boy.
You know, for as much good Wizards and Warriors stuff they were able to get in there, they still managed to, you know, majorly botch some of the other things.
I'm just hoping we haven't convinced anybody to watch this show. But this guy who had won awards for writing good Muppet Babies episodes wrote this awful dreck. They got like a team of 9 writers in for the second season. We never got that far. The second season also introduces a new character, Game Boy.
Yes, it does.
Like a Game Boy shaped like flying carpet that talks.
Yeah, giant floating Game Boy with a face on it. Can't wait to see him.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to get together and watch that one day.
There's also some Zelda episodes later on where Link and Zelda show up. So
there are. Yeah, Link shows up. That's a thing.
Maybe we'll get to those. I should mention, the way we were watching this is on a DVD collection that came out, probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago or something like that. I don't think it's been re-released since then. It's not easily available and definitely not worth the effort of tracking down.
No, gosh, no. I think if you watched an episode of it on YouTube, you'd get the flavor for it and you'd save yourself countless hours of mind-numbing boredom.
Well, in conclusion, I would say Captain N... you know, still terrible, not quite as terrible as I had previously thought. But then again, that might just be my beverages talking.
Yeah, terrible. Don't watch it.
Well, I think that takes care of this discussion. And I guess that means that we're going to wrap up this episode. But before we go, there is still time for, that's right, a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the Capcom NES game Strider. Stand by, Strider. Upon receiving your orders from the commander, you are dropped into the heart of Russia, armed with only your lightning-quick sword. Your task is to infiltrate the Red Army and return enemy secrets to your superiors. Your mission begins in Red Square, but after fighting off KGB attacks there, your clues lead you to the snow-capped mountains of Siberia to battle both the elements and the enemy. If you survive this icy test, your orders are to proceed south to the lowlands, where jungle tribes await with spears and poison arrows. Now you must return to Moscow to face the Grand Master of the Red Army. It is vile that you get to him before he destroys you, or the world will fall under Russian control. The free world relies on your success.
I didn't realize this was so Russian, anti-Russia.
Well, that's the thing. The game isn't. This is like totally not what the game is at all. I mean, it is set in Russia. There's a lot of Russian stuff.
Why didn't they even describe the gameplay at all? Like, if I'm going to buy this game, I'm not going to buy it based on your stupid, crappy story. The only thing they got right was the sword. What do you think?
Pretty much. But yeah, I mean, the Siberia part isn't even in the NES game. It's in the arcade game. It's all just very, very wrong. It's almost as wrong as some of the things in Captain N the Game Master.
Boy, we really hate the Russians, don't we? We hate them enough to just fictionalize the fact that there's anything to do with Russians in this whole dumb video game. And this is actually a good video game.
Yeah, it's a great game. But the back of the box is, it's just a little bit off.
It's full of lies. Yeah.
One last thing I want to mention, though, before we sign off. Our contest has come to a close. We are hoping to have the results for this episode. We will be reporting them next episode instead. So hold on a little bit longer.
I've dug up the Game Boys. Chris, when you came over, you saw the pile of Game Boys. Mm-hmm. So they do exist. And yeah, we'll be picking a winner this week, and we'll have a winner announced next week.
Yep, definitely. Anyway, that does it for now. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can follow Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the show, it would be great to give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
Mega bye!
And our good friend Skull Kid, we will see you next time.